Would you introduce yourselves, please?
Ted Nesseth, I play guitar in the Heavenly States.
Genevieve, I play keys and violin and sing a little bit.
Jeremy, I play the drums.
What I do want to do is fix the band forming story, because it seems like everybody gets it wrong. You know, there's Minnesota in here, and there's a lot of stuff in here that somehow no one gets this story right. And if we do nothing else in this interview, we don't care about talking about the music. Let's get the forming the band story right.
I was in a band called Fluke Starbucker, believe it or not, which is a lead character in a spoof called Hardware Wars. I don't know if you know that film. Yeah. So I moved out here with my bandmates from Minnesota, and they sort of slowly fizzled away. And Jeremy, I met him in a roommate referral service or whatever, and he would come. He was living with me. Jeremy was looking for a roommate. I was looking for a roommate. He came and checked out the place. It was a complete dump, apparently within his range of price. And I was such a wacko, drugged out weirdo. I ordered Chinese food and forgot that I didn't have any money, and he paid for it when the Chinese food came. And I since quit drugs, but not Chinese food. So anyway, Jeremy would come home, and he was playing drums in his room on these practice pads, and I had this other drummer, and I just was like, this guy's got to be in my band. And so I got him doing like sort of side percussion and keyboard, and then the original drummer ended up not being in the band anymore, and then we went through trying out numerous keyboard players and different sort of support people, and then finally I think we just gave up Craigslist, knowing that there was his sister's a talented musician, so we asked her to play, and she accepted. And then we went through 13 bass players to the band that you have before you.
Yeah. Are you a Bay Area band, a San Francisco band, or do you prefer to truly be an Oakland band?
I personally would say Oakland. I'm not necessarily speaking for the band as a whole when I say that, but I would say Oakland.
But my favorite quote, which I want you to kind of elaborate on for just 30 seconds, is in a recent interview when somebody asked you this, you said you sound like freedom.
Oh my God. Did I say that I quit doing drugs? Okay. The question, I'll tell a story about it. I used to take the BART every day to work, and there was this homeless poet that would come on the BART and say, like, you give me a word and a dollar, and I'll write a poem for you on the spot, right? Uh-huh. And I always thought, like, I'm gonna give him like a word that just will like won't inspire him. So I gave him the word static, and he sat there trying to sort of put static into it. So it was that kind of thing. It's like every time I get asked the question, I'm always like, I don't know what to say.
From the moment that The Layer came out, you've gotten good reviews, you know. So do you really? I want you to answer this for a second. I mean, is this that moment, or is this kind of just a continuation of that moment that you're a working band and
we're just doing what we've always done, and people are kind of saying what they always say, especially the ones that have followed us from day one. And it's been a little while, as you say. It's been a while. We've been around a little while, and we change and grow, but we, you know, we're the same, and we're continuing to work. It's, you know, the burden is a little heavier. But this moment, I think, has come down to trying to figure out how to maintain people's attention for more than 15 to 25 seconds into a song, because now it's check out the song, hear the free 15, you know, second snippet, and then move on and dismiss the band or accept it into your world. That's what we're dealing with. And we always tended to suffer anyway, because we can sound like a different band from one song to the next anyway. We have that eclectic thing happening. So it's even more of a challenge. But since we've been suffering under that since the beginning, nothing's really changed. It's just now we have a shorter window.
Like many of us, I saw a Spoon at South by Southwest, I don't remember, it was a decade ago, you know, a long, long time ago. And people kept saying, what do you think of this band? What do you think of this band? What do you think of this band? And I told, I'm dropping a name, but I told this story to John Bryan. Yeah. I said, the moment that I started liking Spoon was when you produced a track of theirs. Mm-hmm. And I heard something different in the band that appealed to me more than the band I saw at South by Southwest early on. But yet, in a way, it's also very brave of you, because it's very easy for a band to get lost in the fact that you asked this gentleman to sing one of your songs.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, I'm a fan of his. He's a fan of ours. So it's like people, it's just people making music. And when there was an opportunity for us to try to do something together, we wanted to do it. So, you know, I just remember walking in on the Upper West Side with my manager, and he texted me like, oh, I really, really can't stop listening to Makeup, which is a song off of Delayer.
Right.
And I was like, I literally looked at Kim and I'm just like, I'm going to ask him to do a song on this record, because I wanted him to participate in some way, because he likes the band. So, and I asked him if he would sing on a song, and he was like, he just texted me back immediately. He was like, I'll totally do it. He actually tracked the song the day that Transference came out in his home studio, like for 3 hours, and was late for an interview. So it was kind of, you know, he's a busy dude, you know, I mean, he's a really busy dude. So, but I mean, ultimately it's like music, people loving music, doing music because we love music and he loves it, and that's it, you know, that's kind of it. But it doesn't hurt that he's Britt Daniel.
It's okay, and it's our song and we wrote it and it sounds like us, but and it's not a random choice too. His voice adds so much to it. It just really makes sense. It's actually just kind of perfect. So yeah, it's not just Britt sing any old song, you know, this particular thing just was kind of made for you. And
we weren't even sure he was going to do the lead when we tracked it. We thought we were going to do a call and response between him and me, and then in the studio it just wasn't working, and it was like, this is just what works. So, you know, I bowed down, I bowed out, and I came back in on the chorus, god damn it.
But you do have a theory behind this, right? That you'd rather make little conceptual groups of songs rather than try to make like the big album that goes all over the place. And I know you said there's variation, but there is synergy too. And that's kind of the point of you making EPs, is it not? Not to mention it's a groovy thing to do these days.
Yeah, I mean, well, ultimately, this record was done a year ago, and we were going to put it out ourselves, and then somebody wanted to put it out. So that's another reason why it took so long. And we all said to ourselves, from this point forward, we're just going to, we've got a lot of songs. We've got a lot of ideas, and it's faster. It's much more efficient to put them together in a shorter amount of time. It's less expensive to make an EP. You can do it faster, and we committed ourselves now to doing this. So it's like, I mean, I think we're all people that work. I think a lot of people in the music business work better under pressure, a little bit of pressure, self-imposed. So that's kind of like, we wanted to give ourselves a project. Oh. Yeah, not wait around, just do it. Yeah, the third record we decided to make on our own, but we still found an amazing engineer who, this guy Bon Berglund, who happens to, you know, be one of the founding members of Factrix, if you remember that, like industrial band way back in the day. Mm-hmm. Amazing ears, amazing talent, little studio in Berkeley. So we made Delayer with him, and then I think Delayer got a lot of, like, people liked the record. A lot of people, you know, kind of reviewed it positively, and then out of that, our manager found a guy who had a bunch of producers that wanted to make this record. So we made this record with Bill Leffler, and then John Aniello mixed it, who's, you know, John Aniello is a legendary dude. So the 10 years that we've been in a band, I've seen the entire landscape change like 3 different times, you know. Even when we released the first record, there was really no such thing as digital. We actually were so confused by the whole digital part of a record deal that we just chose, both the label and us chose to leave it out. We like excluded it from our deal because we didn't know what it was.
I mean, we still believe in labels, and we would love record sellers to be able to sell things. I mean, you know, vacuum cleaner salesman to be able to sell vacuum cleaners. I mean, I think it's still possible, an important thing to try to do. And since we're not, I don't know, maybe we're not kind of a mood band. We're not like a sound palette-y band or a dance band. We're a songwriting band. People have always wanted our songwriting and wanted a piece of it. And they come to the table.
The infamous publishing.
Right.
You know, which you know as well as I know is the one thing.
The one thing left.
Do not give away. It's the only thing left.
And more and more.
More and more people are insisting on that. And more and more people are yielding.
Video, we want your publishing.
Yeah. And people are yielding. And those who yield, they get a situation for a short time, and they come and they go, and they come and they go. And then they form a new band, and then, and you know, we're just not a, we own every record, and every piece of it. So
we probably would be in a different place in terms of success if we'd given, or if we'd sort of caved. But I'm really happy to be where we are, still kind of punching away, owning everything that we've ever done. We own the masters. We own the publishing. We own our music, and so I feel like that's a rare thing these days. Hippies Are Dead is like three people. The head of those three people being Patrick Proctor, who also has a blog called Hippies Are Dead. I don't know if you've seen that blog, but he's young. He is a monstrous music fan, more than anything. And he's always liked the band. He saw us open for Spoon. I think the first time he saw us was we opened for Spoon 3 nights at the Fillmore. And he fell in love with the band immediately then. And we've always just been in conversations. And he started a label a year ago. And when I was in New York, I was visiting some friends. And I asked him if he wanted to come out. He's living in New York now. And I played him some songs. And he actually was telling me, basically just said, I'm starting a label and I want to put your record out. And we talked about it, and you know, we'd been approached by actual, you know, like, we're established, we've got the system, you know, and we'll put you in our machine and things might go okay, and we don't know if we like you or not. but this was a different story, because Patrick is a super fan, and he was really motivated and ready to put a lot of his own time into it, and it just felt right. So it wasn't the most money that we got offered or anything like that. It was you know, every penny that we made from that deal, we just put right back into the record, into investing in the idea of the record, you know. And that's what you have to do at this point. We actually are also, you know, we foot a lot of our own bills, and I think part of that is because we don't want a 360 deal. We don't want people to own us at the end of the day. We'd rather, you know, work a couple of extra hours a day and be able to spend our own money and keep our own ownership of things. So that's kind of the deal.
This morning I said, okay, well, I better listen to the whole thing in the car. And I hadn't listened to the last two tracks. And that track came on and I didn't have to pull over. But I almost had to pull over, because I just said, you know, it's not even a hidden track. But I could just imagine not me, but I can imagine 75% of the world who, you know, is getting the record, or somebody who buys it on iTunes and doesn't decide just to go for the two tracks they like, and then they think, I just paid 99 cents for track number 7. I know that Eugene is a recurring character on Flight of the Conchords, and that you...
He's the voice of the sun on Bob.
Right, and you also kind of ran into him.
We played with Eugene and Mark Maron and Andy Kindler in Fargo one night, shared a bill. Eugene and I connected immediately, and then I ended up seeing him a couple more times. I saw him at Sasquatch Festival, because he played there, we played there. Then every time he came to San Francisco, he would just let me know, and then I would hang out with him. He put me on the guest list for the Flight of the Conchords when they played the Greek Theater. He opened, along with Arj Barker, and this is last year around June, and I just said, you know, would you do like an outro on our record, you know, or an intro or an outro or something? And he said he would do it, and then he got really busy with the Bob's Burgers things. So I found a studio literally 5 minute walk from his house, where we actually mixed the record too. He's like 5 minutes from this place, Headgear, and so he walked in. Text 5 minutes before he walked in there, he was like, do you have any bad reviews of your band? I was like, I've got a few. So then he just had me send them to him, and he kind of embellished them.
I've invented a thing called a musical sandwich. It's two of your songs as the bread, and then songs by anybody else you want to play in between.